Ladies, welcome to our Bible study segment. We are in the book of Esther. Now here's our Bible study teacher, Beth Seifert.
Thank you, Amy. Well, yesterday we saw Esther starting to put her plan into action as she has invited the king and Haman to eat with her and then did not tell the king what all of this was about, but invited the king and Haman to come again the next night. And in the meantime, we're about to see another little plot twist that goes into Esther. So if you have your Bibles, go ahead and open. We're going to be in Esther chapter 5. We're going to be reading verses 9 through 14 today. And Haman went out that day joyful and glad of heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he neither rose nor trembled before him, he was filled with wrath against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home, and he sent and brought his friends and his wife Zeresh. And Haman recounted to them the splendor of his riches, the number of his sons, all the promotions with which the king had honored him, and how he had advanced him above all the officials and the servants of the king. Then Haman said, "Even Queen Esther let no one but me come with the king to the feast she prepared, and tomorrow also I am invited by her together with the king. Yet all this is worth nothing to me so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate." Then his wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, "Let a gallows 50 cubits high be made, and in the morning tell the king to have Mordecai hanged upon it. Then go joyfully with the king to the feast." This idea pleased Haman, and he had the gallows made. So Haman is having a good day. He's so thrilled that he was invited by the queen to dine with her, not once, but twice. His good fortune is astounding to him, and he leaves the palace thinking everything he wants is about to fall into place. But as he leaves, he sees Mordecai, who still refuses to pay tribute to Haman, this time refusing to even rise when Haman passes by, not just refusing to bow. And Haman's good mood goes from joyful and glad of heart to filled with wrath in about 2.2 seconds. It appears that it is with great difficulty that he manages to restrain himself and go home. Look at how much his hatred for Mordecai was able to completely obliterate his joy at his invitation to eat at the queen's table with the king. This was an honor by the most important people in Persia. Yet here is this Jew who is an official. Yeah, but he's not irreplaceable. But this Jew isn't showing Haman honor, and Haman can't stand that. He isn't content with the honor shown to him by the people who matter. His focus is on Mordecai and his inability to control him. Look what Haman does when he gets home. He calls to himself his friends and family, and then he boasts to them all the amazing things that he has. This is a time when he's boasting in himself and his power, in his fame, in his sons, which were a sign of power, and in his position in the king's court. This should be a celebration for his family, a time of wallowing in all the amazing things they have. Yet then Haman drops the other shoe. All of this, to him, it is worthless as long as Mordecai is alive. Wow! What gets me is he can sit there and list off all of these amazing things that are in his favor. He's counting his blessings. And yet he announces that those blessings aren't enough for him. They don't count. None of it matters to him because his hatred for Mordecai has consumed him so much that he can't see straight. Haman completely loses all perspective of reality when he thinks of Mordecai. Seriously, this gives me no satisfaction? Selfish doesn't begin to describe this man. Neither does narcissistic. Neither does power hungry, but they all get a bit closer to the heart, the black stone heart of this man. His family and friends, specifically his wife, comfort him and give him some advice on how to make himself happy. They tell him to build a gallows and go to the king in the morning and tell the king to have Mordecai hanged on it. They're directing Haman to give the king a command, and Haman is so full of himself that he doesn't even question this. It doesn't even seem strange to him. Haman now has a plan to enable him to be able to enjoy the banquet with the king and queen. Build the gallows tonight, Tell the king to hang Mordecai on it in the morning. Go enjoy the party tomorrow night. Haman, he delighted in that thought of Mordecai hanging and death. He doesn't even consider the fact that the king might not obey this command. Take a step back today and look at this. Do you see how Haman has made an idol out of Mordecai's bowing or not bowing? Seriously, nothing else matters. Nothing else penetrates to Haman and sticks with him except the thought that Mordecai is still alive and still refusing to honor him in the way he wants. He can take no joy in anything else, in being honored by the king and queen. Nothing, simply because of one man. His happiness depends on Mordecai. Do you see that? And do you see how he makes Mordecai responsible for that? He can't even ignore Mordecai on this day when he's been honored so highly, knowing that Mordecai's end is coming within the year. Nope. Mordecai ruined my party. It's no fun just because he's alive. Wow. Now, here's the thing we need to realize. There are still Hamans in the world today. Have you ever met people like that? Have you ever met someone who, no matter what blessings are poured out on them, no matter what amazing things happen to them, they aren't satisfied. They are unable to be joyful, at least not true joy, simply because it's not enough, or even that person has better stuff than me. Talk about a lack of contentment. Now, I know Haman did not know God. That's pretty obvious. But still, I see this amongst the people who claim to know God too. I've heard Christians say about a ministry role, why did they pick so-and-so instead of me to fill that role? They covet that role so much that they are not able to step back and consider that God knows why he put whom he put in that role. For them, it isn't about ministry anymore. It's about their own pride. I've heard Christians say too, God, when will you bless me like you blessed so-and-so? After all, I've been good and they haven't. All of this sounds to me like a case of the older brother in the parable of the prodigal son. That older brother wanted the same thing the younger brother did. He wanted the father's stuff, but he tried to get it by being obedient, by being the good boy, whereas the younger brother just boldly demanded the stuff by being disobedient. There's a phrase, ladies, that I would like for us all to think about today. Bloom where you are planted. Quit looking across at the field of flowers that you wish you were part of. Quit looking at the neighbor flower and longing after their color or size or shape or whatever. God has planted you where you are for a reason, for his glory, for his purpose. And if you love God and are called according to his purpose, then he is acting for the ultimate best for you as well. I'm not talking about stuff here, ladies. We're talking about being refined for his purpose, for our sanctification and for his glory. We need to stop looking around and start looking up to the sun. Bloom, grow, and reach out toward the sun and see what he has in store for you right where you are. Don't expect to be transplanted either. Don't say, okay, God, I'll bloom here, fine, but only with the understanding that you will move me to where I want to be after I do what you want me to do. It doesn't work that way. You can't barter with God, so quit trying. Instead, ask him today what it looks like to bloom where you are planted. Not to just survive, but to thrive. Isn't it time that we let go of our own agendas and trust that the creator of the universe does know what he's doing?
Well, thank you, Beth. And ladies, that lesson that you just heard is available in a 10-minute audio segment on our website today, along with the individual study guide for today. And look for it at naomistable.com under the Bible Study tab. You can use these as a study for yourself or to teach women around your own table. Nancy and I will be back to talk more about today's lesson in just a moment. Mm-hmm.